two panelists. I'm going to start with inviting Lavinia McDonald just to give us a brief background and experience. Then I'm going to come to Peter Berger. Lavinia.
Hi all, I'm Lavinia McDonald. I've been in the financial services industry now for 19 years. I've set up my own financial planning firm, The Money Clinic, last year. Well, it was mainly out of frustration, more than anything else. I think as an industry, we do things in a very old-fashioned way, very clunky. The systems we used are a little bit clunky. And it was all about providing and delivering an advice in a more technologically advanced way, using tech to keep costs low and deliver better consumer outcomes. So that all came back from the FCA's Consumer Duty paper. So that's where the idea and everything came from.
Perfect link through to our subject today. Congratulations on setting up your own firm and great to hear that you're one of a growing number of advisors that are really looking to do things differently. Peter, if you could give us a similar background to yourself, that would be greatly appreciated.
Good morning. My name is Peter Berger. I've been in the industry for 27 years, and it starts to make you realize how old you are as an old fossil like myself. But I've been in all sectors. I've been in the industrial sector working for Pearl Assurance. I've worked a period of time for one of the banks, Lloyds Bank. I've worked for a stockbroking firm in terms of Edward Jones, an American firm who brought in lots of technology. And we then moved across to Raymond James. And then in 2020, we decided to go directly authorized. So I've had a varied journey with different types of providers. And technology is interesting. It's quite difficult to run the technology in an independent advice space. Having worked in banks whereby they are solely selling their own products, it's quite easy to create the technology. But when you have multiple providers and open architecture and all these sort of things, it's much, much harder. I'm keen on technology. I think it presents our clients with a far better picture of their financial future than the old fag packet used to do many years ago. And the various drawings that I had to sort of hide under the compliance rules that I used over my time. So therefore, I'm a big fan, but I've also got a healthy dose of skepticism and concerns regarding technology. And in some respects, now when moving into the AI space, for those of us who sort of grew up earlier and had dot-to-dot pictures, AI is the lines between the dots, and it's going to connect your LOAs to your CRM, and it's going to pick up clients' emotions, which at the moment are not being collected digitally. And suddenly it will sort of perhaps push us forward into an automated financial advice program and perhaps affect us, not necessarily in a positive way that we were hoping for. So we've got to be a bit careful with it. So I love it, but I have some questions and I have some doubts. But that's roughly me in a nutshell. I look after four other advisors, so technology to understand what they're doing is important to me.
Thank you very much, Peter. Great track record there. Very impressed that you've been across all the different branches. I have to confess, just to prove, you're not really that old, my friend. I mean, I'm a total dinosaur. I'm in my 51st year in the industry, which I still find hard to believe, but it is true. Having started with Guardian Royal Exchange back in 1974, but there you go. This is a great day to be having this conversation because on the point you've just made, our good friends at the Financial Conduct Authority, this probably hasn't hit the wires yet, but our good friends at the Financial Conduct Authority this morning published an engagement paper on a proposal for AI live testing. I've popped a little link to that. I would imagine that then, in fact, there is a call for input and there is a closing date for responses on the 10th of June. But actually, I think it's quite refreshing that the FCA are actually. So somebody posted on a discussion group the other day that the FCA should get involved in testing these things. And I must admit, my reaction was, well, yeah, you're right, they should do, but will they? And I've been proved wrong. So congratulations, the FCA, for stepping forward. I don't think they're going to test everything. Anyway, I just thought that was a timely announcement to, a timely announcement to mention. So the subject today is very much the use of technology in consumer duty. I must admit, I don't understand how any firm could try and meet their consumer duty obligations if they weren't using technology. I do believe there are some that try to, but I think they're probably working a lot harder than they need to. but can I start by asking each of you to give us examples of how technology is really helping you in your meeting your consumer duty obligations, and perhaps give us each couple of examples of things that are just so much easier to do. Peter, can I start with you?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I think technology, what do we use? Well, we're a discretionary investment management firm, so we've also got some responsibilities to capital adequacy. So for me, you know, accounting QuickBooks is the number one thing. It's probably not a massive exciting thing in terms of financial planning, but it does help us keep the doors open and making sure that we're meeting requirements. And as a result of that, actually, it wasn't a very good tool for that. So we've actually introduced something called Fathom. And Fathom is really, it's a financial tool. And having employed a Ned in the business, he likes me to produce various bits on Fathom, charts of turnover increasing, capital adequacy, but also non-financial data. So a lot of the data regarding the number of clients we're attracting, those sort of things, and also the number of advisors we have and the types of business they are doing, is trying to bring into Fathom. So we've got a single report to sort of see that. But so those are two things we use. And the other things we use, we're an intelligent office user. So intelligent office have chucked in a whole lot of technology. But we need to sort of really go back to the front end, don't we? Because technology and AI and MI is okay, but you've got to have an input. So for us, the most important thing was to have a really easy to use digital fact find, because in order to use technology, advice really needs to start with what tool are you using? You know, and that starts with your laptop or your tablet that you use interacting with a client. If you get that wrong and aren't able to start the conversation digitally to start with and still hanker back to the days when you used to write things on a piece of paper, you're already putting yourself on the back foot. And that's probably the biggest argument I'm having at the moment with my people, is start using your technology in the client meetings. Because when we go to the restaurant, you know, I went to Witherspoon's of all things the other day, and you have to actually use an app to order your own things. So the idea of getting a client to actually upload their own information into a digital fact find starts to make sense. Or alternatively, somebody comes around with a tablet and they record. So the whole digital journey, the technological journey, actually starts in the client's first meeting at home. Because once you've got that basic data in, you've already saved yourself a whole lot of time, either doing it yourself or getting somebody else to record your data. And that leads to the MI. The MI side of things is actually a bit frustrating, because I've just spent some time in preparation for today's meeting looking at all the MI that I've got available. But it's only as good as the inputs.
Tweezer.
And now looking at some of the inputs, which widget and button and whatever you've got to press in the backside of a the actual plan details is actually quite complicated. And my biggest concern is, how do I actually make the data, the MI data that I'm pulling out from my fact find or from our meetings and our recordings, how do I actually get all of it to be consistent? Having four advisors, I now got to train each one and all the administrators to press buttons in the right place or tick a box to make sure that data comes forward when I actually want it to hand. But it makes a lot of difference, you know, and I was talking in the prelude to this conversation with Ian, it's just starting to shape things like our investments proposition. We can see who our clients are, so we can more accurately target market or target our products to the type of clients we're dealing with. And rather than wasting a lot of time on creating portfolios for clients that we don't have, we can now actually spend more time focusing on the portfolios of clients we do have. So technology helps us in many ways to take our business forward, protect it, but also let us look at what the future looks like. So it's very important to us.
Thank you. Your point on fact-finding is really well made. And indeed, I'm just going to share briefly on screen. We've been doing a lot of consumer research recently on how customers really want to receive financial advice and what they want financial advice to include. And it's quite fascinating. There are a whole load of things that many advisors have told me in the past, X, Y, or Z, no, that's not financial advice. It's kind of interesting when you go and ask consumers, actually they're saying, no, it is financial advice. And you know what, I'd actually pay for that particular service. And before anyone suggests that's only young people, we've measured this by age, obviously, but we've looked at people across the, we specifically looked at their level of retirement savings, their level of non-retirement savings, and the value of their property. And there's some absolutely fascinating information about new technology services that, you know, or technology driven services that customers are very willing to pay for, which the advice community has not considered to be part of advice historically. If I can just share this slide briefly on screen before I come to Lavinia. This was where we actually looked at what are the consumers' preferred ways of getting ready for an advice meeting? And as you will see, there's only 14% that are sort of, no, I want to give the information during the meeting. Another 20% are like, I prefer to do it in the meeting, but if it's going to save me money, I'll do it up front. 22% actually happy to go through a structured form. And again, 26% happy for the information to be gathered from organizations with whom they have existing relationships. That's enormously relevant because it actually means that does refer to the, in my view, poorly named open banking. But it shows, and we have other data that suggests that while advisors don't think open banking is relevant to advice, there's a huge number of consumers that do. And as we go forward with the data use and access bill just coming through the House of Commons, that's the one that's going to get rid of refusal of letters of authority, folks. but what you will be in a situation where consumers will be quite happy, subject to the right security, and we did include that in the question, actually to, let people hook things up. Lavinia, I've you've been very patient. Please tell us how you're using tech and particularly in your consumer duty reporting.
Will do. I have to say the findings on that survey are exactly my thoughts and what I'm finding with my own clients. Like I said, I am very keen to implement technology. Of course, I don't exclude clients out if they're not technology users. So I want to put that out there. If, you know, I meet Mr. and Mrs. Jones and they're in their 80s and they refuse to use a computer and they do not like technology, by all means, I'll go and see them at home and we'll go through paperwork and we'll discuss the face-to-face thing. I am not opposed to doing paper if that's what a consumer needs. However, I do say that about 80%, maybe even 90% of my clients are mainly technology-based. I collect information, fact-finding information from the clients directly via a portal. Clients equally upload any other supporting information to that portal. I then go on and feed it through a technology AI portal such as Advisory AI, and it pre-fills a fact find in less than 10 minutes. I check said fact find, and here we are. We have a very, very well compliant fact find coming out of that. Now, one thing that I found incredible actually for consumer duty and reporting, I suppose, more than anything, is that when you record that initial meeting with that note taker and you use a system such as, for example, Advisory AI, and you put that information through and the meeting notes come through at the end, he analyzes every aspect of that meeting, and he captures emotions, he captures feelings, he quotes the client, which, you know, as much as with all the best intentions that we have taking notes in the meeting, and with all the best intentions, the regulator loves that, it's not always possible for us to capture every single quote, important quote that the client has in a meeting, whereas an AI note taker, you know, is able to. So, you know, and then from the reporting side of things, personally, my network uses Xplan, not the greatest technology out there. I'm aware there is far better technology, and I am still on the hunt for a CRM that is actually able to do everything that I wanted to do. But I am still at a loss as to whether that specific product exists in today's market. We've had a conversation with the last Consumer Duty Alliance in October with the FCA, and my feedback to them was that they should have a chat and sit down with all the CRM providers and actually tell them what they want from us in terms of reporting, and then they can build a system where we can obviously provide the relevant information. Whether that will happen, that remains to be seen. Then in terms of, again, reporting, I also like to use FE Analytics. So I don't know if a lot of people in the room have used FE, but in terms of showing value for money and demonstrating, you know, a provider provides value for money, I like to use their comparison, advisory asset, I think it's called. And it is great, both from a due diligence perspective and as well as demonstrating value for money for consumers. So yes, there is a lot of technology out there. Perhaps if we can all marry it together, we might have a super product that will tick all the boxes.
I'm just going to pop a link, and this is just generally, we do run a service which is free to advisors, where the team of people that we have here spend a huge amount of time looking at advice tech, and we create a whole load of analysis that's available free to advisors. There is a link just going in there now, and I know that any day now we've got an analysis of FE's advisor asset product that you just mentioned. I think that's coming out in early May, but I know it's just been reviewed.
I've recently started to use it, and I have to say it beats a lot of the other tools out there.
I think it's a very smart move by FE to acquire that one. I've had a question come in for you, Lavinia, actually, about data protection implications of using AI software. Where is the data actually going? Is it safe? Does it acquire additional consent disclosure from clients? Could you share your views on that?
Yes. So, of course, my privacy notice covers all that, and the fact that I share data. I also seek consent from each and every client verbally. So I make them aware that, as you know, yes, this is my pricing structure and this is how I do things, but it is the way it is and it's competitive because I implement tools, technology tools, in order to do my job. And they have to be comfortable with that side of things. That being said, I do full due diligence into all tools that I use. I ensure that I'm in charge of the data. I ensure that it is not, you know, shared in places that it shouldn't be shared. And obviously that my customers are fully protected from that perspective. Yes, there is a little bit more of legwork to do behind the scenes, keeping up with due diligence and, you know, reviewing all changes periodically to make sure that, you know, all these tools remain, as they say they do, fully encrypted, and they do not share the data, and, you know, we are in charge of the data and it's fully protected. But as we know, I do use tools that are generally prepared and designed for us financial advisors, which generally speaking, they are you know, relatively safe. If I have any questions, additional questions, I go to the providers and ask them, okay, so how do you do this? I have to be able to answer my clients' questions about these areas. So I have to be fully prepared for a meeting. I would say always go on the cautious side. If you're not 100% sure where the data is, then don't do it.
Yeah, very, very good point. I'm just about to put another link in the chat because we have actually built an advisor AI tool assessment framework, which is looking not just at UK AI propositions, but also those across the US, Australia, New Zealand, Canada, and we're going to be adding Dubai soon. And there are a whole load more. We're due to do an additional group of AI systems being added to that. Again, this is all free to advisors. You do need to register to get access to the site, but it's all free for you. Peter, because I know when we were talking, I think you've been looking at AI as well. Would you like to share your experiences and thought? Is it a positive thing? Is it helping you? And if so, by how much?
Well, we're not really in the full flow of it. I have too many concerns about the AI. It's probably the truth. We've tried out two or three different systems now. But the AI argument is still a Betamax VHS argument in that who's going to be the winner. And I have to be honest, there's a lot of double glazing salesing going on in terms of have a demo of our system. And, by the way, do you want to sign up at the end of it? And it's only £100 a month. But it isn't £100 a month, is it? It's actually £1,200. There's £1,400 per year per user. And that's quite a bit off your bottom line. And what's it going to record? And yes, it records feelings, which we currently don't record quite quickly ourselves. But in order to get a fact find together, you're still going to have to ask, you know, what's your name, your address, your middle name, your date of birth, your national insurance number. And therefore, it's not necessarily going to do that. You're going to ask clients to do that separately. So that brings a lot of questions to me.